This is Mile High.
Do I want to tell the story or do I want to show the message?
You've got a lot of work to do between Mile High.
The time has come where we can know.
We have a responsibility, an ethical and moral responsibility.
We have to do it better in order to move people along.
Up, down, inside out.
If you get your mind right,
it is not. It is a receiver of thought.
Because love is my first technique.
It's now time for the show.
Welcome to the Mile High Podcast. This is your host, Dr. Daniel Knowles. Thank you for joining us. And the first thing I'm going to share is to make sure you know to never miss an episode of Mile High Tick. Hit subscribe, whether you're listening to this on iTunes, Google, Stitcher, YouTube, whatever it might be, Facebook, so you always stay in tune with Mile High. And, of course, we don't want you to make sure to dial in being at Mile High August 20th to 23rd, 2020. It's easy to remember. It's the Roaring Twenties. And you can find out all the details at www.milehigh2020.com. Today, I am so enthused, excited to welcome to the podcast one of this year's speakers who is going to be her first time on the Mile High stage. Every time I've heard her speak and all of the material I've seen her do online, I've been so impressed with. I feel like we're on a similar path, and I'm excited to do this interview with her, Dr. Nona Javed, and I always wonder if I'm messing up her name. So I would just say the first name. Dr. Nona, at the age of 16, migrated to the U.S. She found her way to chiropractic school at Life West, preceded by being at Berkeley, and has then grown in her life and practice to a $1 million practice and mentoring others. She is really one of the things I love about her story is I love success stories of people that really had to start from the very beginning. And I love hearing and seeing that. And that's one of the reasons why I look up to her and what she's done. Welcome and thank you for joining us, Dr. Nona.
Thank you. What a great introduction. Thank you. I love it.
And I'm excited
to be here. Thank you.
So first of all, let's have people get to know you a little bit better. So how did you find your way into the chiropractic world?
You know, it sounds cliche every time I say it. Obviously, you get that question all the time. And every time I say it, I have to preface it with, it's so cliche. But it's true. I feel that chiropractic really found me. Because I was ready to go in a completely different direction. I had we have a lot of family members in the healthcare field, Western medicine. And so I was always sort of pushed in that direction, but I just innately knew there was something off about it. I didn't want to go out and just prescribe medicine to my patients or become a dentist and be in their mouth or whatever. But I was on that path. I mean, even like all the way through Berkeley, I applied, I got accepted to NYU, and like last minute I had to break the news to my parents, like, listen, I'm not going to dental school. I'm going to become a chiropractor. Of course, you can imagine, like, you know, it took some work to get their blessing, but it all worked out, and now they all get adjusted and everything else. But I met a chiropractor at a party that I went to, and he didn't adjust me. He cracked my neck at the party. And so I knew very little about it, but I was intrigued enough to look into it. And I remember reading Life West's like mission statement or like, you know, in their catalog. And I was like, yeah, this makes sense to me. This is where I'm supposed to be. And then I just switched everything over and ended up at Life West.
Cool. Very cool. And then being at Life West, how did you find and grow into the philosophy?
At Life West, it was easy, but I'll have to be honest, I didn't really get into it at Life West. It wasn't until I want to say a few years into practice. I know I'm a little embarrassed to say that, but I was looking for like that philosophical, that chiropractic conviction. I remember telling myself or the universe, I would be like, okay, well, what is this conviction everybody talks about? I want some. You know, what is this philosophy? Because I did CBP and it was great. We did structural correction and all of that, but it was very much like left brain. It was very much structural, analytic. And so I definitely missed out on that philosophy a little bit, or it was just a different way of the philosophy of chiropractic. Mm-hmm. And a few years into practice, I had this patient who walked in. She came in with like acute lower back pain. We sat down. We found 30 different health problems with her. Her name's Megan. And after, I mean, I started working. She was also on a list of medications. She was taking, you know, the typical chiropractic story. I took her on. We worked on her. She got better. She brought in her daughter, who was a four-year-old toddler at the time. And by the time she got to my office, she'd had multiple surgeries because she was born with congenital heart defect. And so she was on breathing treatments daily, headaches, you know, all kinds of stuff. Immune system was basically non-existent. Her mom wouldn't even let her go outside to play with other kids or have a play date because she would just get sick. And I started working with Audrey. Audrey started to feel better. And then there was a time in practice where my husband was like, you should get some patient testimonials. And honestly, I was so jaded. I just knew chiropractic was gonna help people because that's what it was doing in my practice. So I picked a few patients. They came in on a Saturday, set up the videographer and everything, and I start talking to Megan. And you know, I asked her three questions. And I remember the last question was, Megan, what would have happened if you didn't come to the practice? And I remember Megan just kind of got internal and tears started to flow and she kind of got quiet. And then next thing you know, what she said was like totally shocking because I wasn't expecting. I was expecting her saying something like, my life would suck. I would be in pain, you know, whatever. And she goes, 2 days before I walked into your practice, I was going to commit suicide. And I think that that was the moment where philosophy, conviction, science, all of it, like if you can imagine, they all just kind of came together for me. And that was the moment where I realized that chiropractic was more about giving people their potential back versus, you know, and I was honestly, I was swimming in like neck and back pain patients. I just couldn't mm-hmm. see the big picture.
Mm-hmm.
But I really think that it was literally 3 years into practice. I had exposure to chiropractic philosophy and all of the good stuff. But it wasn't until that moment where I really, really got it.
You know, I think that's very beautiful. And I know I've had so much. I mean, I'm like getting teared up because I've had those experiences in my office taking care of people. And, you know, that can happen at any chiropractic institution, LifeWest, Sherman, whatever, that people get some exposure but don't really have that fully ingrained in their being because it's not as much a part of the chiropractic education it was in, say, the 20s or something, right? We're in a different era of chiropractic in so many ways. However, there's this place where you get to a point of there's a spine correction area or we're working in those clinical indicators that I've got as an outcome. There's an area where like, oh, I'm thinking about the person's symptoms going away, but there's a whole nother encapsulation when you're like, this is the person's life and you realize, you know, how much you're impacting the person's life. And then the mission and vision take on a whole, you know, other meaning. And I know many other people speak about that because, and what I hear from you, and what I take away from that is that you get to the point where this is, you know, it's about the person's lives and you have a chiropractic experience. So people can, I think one of the problems with chiropractic is not enough people have had a chiropractic experience. I mean, not enough chiropractors have had enough of a chiropractic experience, such as you just said.
Yeah.
You know, maybe they'll have it, you know, themselves as a patient, or they'll have it in school, or they'll have it in practice when they're like, these miracles happen. This is so much bigger than me, you know? So another reason why I'm so grateful that you'll be a Mile High sharing, because I see that in you all the time. And so with that, you know, you've had an uber successful practice, not always, But, you know, we've all had our ups and downs. We didn't all start out with $1 million practices. But, like, you've had an uber successful practice. With that, what were some areas of growth that helped you grow from where you started to what created that for you?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I went so when I graduated from chiropractic school, I got a job immediately as an associate. I worked as an associate for a short period of time, and then I decided it was not the right fit, and so I left, and I immediately started an independent contracting position where I would be able to hold on to my patients and move them if I had to. And that lasted about 6 months. The doctor actually kicked me out of that practice because I was outgrowing the practice, so she goes, hey, you have 30 days, either move out or become my employee. And so I ended up forced into starting my own practice. But this is back in 2008 when I had to start my practice, and back then the economy crashed.
I remember that.
Right? So everybody around
practice.
Right? And it impacted every single one of us. I mean, I remember talking to a patient, and I'm like working on her neck and about to adjust her cervical. And the patient starts crying, and I'm thinking, what did I do? And she's like, I just lost my house. I lost money in the stock market, da, da, da. And so it was definitely an interesting time, and it was definitely an interesting, challenging time to enter into business, which for those students who are graduating today and in this season with everything that's going on with the corona, with the, you know, the economies of global economies, it's similar, if not worse, right? So you'll hear people say, and I did in 2008, everybody was like, this is the worst time to start a business. Look, that chiropractor down the street just failed. They just closed their doors. That store just closed. This house just worked. You know, so I just kept hearing it. And I was like, man, I have two options. I either subscribe to that, or I have to pick a completely new and different and weird and probably nonsensical perspective in order to succeed, if I want to succeed. So if I had subscribed to the idea that the economy is crap and it's going to crash and it's the worst time to start a business, I would have never done anything with it. I would have been an associate. I may have gotten out of chiropractic at that point. And then I decided, you know what? I'm going to subscribe to the idea that I'm going to succeed in a bad economy so that when the economy picks up, I just put my feet up and enjoy the ride. Because I know how to, if I can succeed in this crashed economy, then guess what? I've figured it out. So then I think that was instrumental and crucial in, you know, establishing the habits that I established, you know, the routines that I had for myself, all the things, because at that point, because it was a sink or swim situation, I didn't come from money. I didn't have a ton of money to start a practice. As a matter of fact, I didn't borrow. I built it slowly. You know, I remember having like one table and one traction unit when I first started in a dinky little space. And then within a few years, I was able to bought the space next door and all of that. But I think that that was really instrumental, because in the sink or swim, I was willing to do whatever it took to be successful, you know, and to get to that next level. And so I tried everything. I did door to door. I hustled, basically, and I was able to get out of that.
Mm-hmm. I love it. I love it. And here's the thing. Guess what? In a bad economy, there's still subluxated spines. Probably more so.
There's more of them. Yes.
Right. So, and you're providing a solution in a time when people need it more. You know, like you mentioned the coronavirus, like people are more distressed right now that it's a gift to be of service and help people during this time, and shift their nerve system state to which will impact their immune system state. So now with you being at Mile High this year, why are you excited about being at Mile High?
Oh, I'm so excited. I cannot wait. I have, I didn't get to go last year. I think I was pregnant or about to give birth or one of those things. But I remember I had a talk at I went to Palmer and I was talking to the students, and I already knew I was going to be talking at Mile High, I think. And the conversation came up, they brought it up, and you know, there's so many reasons why I'm excited. The speaker lineup, amazing. You know, I mean, you have done such a great job, and I know I speak for the rest of chiropractic community to say how grateful we are for what you have put together. But specifically the conversations that the students were having and how inspired they were from going to last year's Mile High. They drove, I don't remember now, like 11 hours or something crazy to get to Mile High, and they, you know, and what they took out of it, and they were just so fired up about it. That was the thing that was like, man, he's doing some really great things.
Well, and thank you for saying that. And, you know, you and I share, you know, some level of, as many of the speakers do, some level of, we like the chiropractic profession being a different place than where it is. Mm-hmm. And I think that all of us share that for sure. And at the same point, we know that students are the future, and we have to nurture them. And so a big part of why we even put together Mile High is really, truly the students, is that they get some exposure to philosophy, science, and art that we know they're not necessarily receiving at the level that we would like to see them receive in chiropractic school. So I'm glad that you noticed that. In Palmer, there's always so many people that drive from the schools near us, you know, such as Palmer and Logan, et cetera. So now, One of the things that I follow your emails and your posts and blogs, and that's one of the reasons why I'm excited to have you at Mile High, because I love the content that you put out, and it speaks to me because I think really much very, very similarly. And systems, one of your recent things, you talked about systems being aligned. Why is that important?
You know, because I don't know, you've probably experienced, maybe not, because you came from a chiropractic background. Your father is a great chiropractor. But my, I ended up early on in my career hiring practice management coaches and just kind of tapping in and seeing what systems they have and which ones I should do and whatever. And anytime I tried one, it seemed as though they were trying to fit me into a box. It was like the 3-day system, the 2-day system, the once in a lifetime opportunity system, right? There was always something.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great from a business, from their business perspective, because it's like, I have the systems, you follow these systems, you'll be successful. And it's probably true for the person who is aligned with that system and with, you know, with say who you are, if that's what you're selling, right? If for me, I followed the systems, my practice was massively successful, but I was also burning out. I always felt there was this disconnect from the scripts I was, you know, reading off to patients, or from the way that I was doing things, there was this disconnect. So, at some point, once I had this near burnout, I decided that I was going to release everything, you know, with gratitude for some of the best mentors I've had in the profession. It just that it wasn't aligned with me. So I started to move away from that, and I started to evaluate every system, every script, like literally new patient phone call all the way to the close, or, you know, the stuff I would tell patients, whether I have a workshop, I don't have, what kind of marketing I would do. And my niche, I started to get specific with, so I started to just align every word that would come out of my mouth and every system that I would have with who I was and what I believed about chiropractic. And that Megan story was crucial in that. Like, if I believe that chiropractic is about life or death, then I'm practicing completely differently than if I thought it was about back pain and neck pain.
Right.
And right. I think I'm getting off track here, but if there are any students or new doctors that are watching or listening, I want them to know that because the idea is with young doctors that you have to deal with neck pain and back pain. And to some degree, it's correct. They walk into the office, right? Because that's the perception we've put out there as a profession, but it's possible to kind of have them transform and educate them into what you actually do in your practice, right? And you, I mean, you're a great example of that, right? I'm sure people come to you with knee pain and back pain all the time.
All the time.
There is a way to be successful. So the mindset is I cannot be successful if I'm not seeing neck pain and back pain patients. But the disconnect is, well, yeah, they're back pain and neck pain patients, but the picture is much bigger than that. Like, just step back a little bit. They have neck pain. They have back pain. They also have constipation. They also have bladder infections. They have a list of things. And all of whatever they have going on with their nervous system, forget the organ problems and their neck pain. How is this having a ripple effect on their generation beyond them, right? So once you focus on the bigger picture, then there's actually more success you can have.
Right.
I think that was the experience for me anyway.
I agree. A long time ago, I was at a presentation and someone said, you know, was asking, like, how do you get the good patients, right? And he made a joke, like, oh, there's a bar they all hang out, and I just go there. Like, there's not, that doesn't exist, right? We as a profession have not done a great job in terms of teaching people what chiropractic is. And so there will be people that are neck, back pain, et cetera, that flock to chiropractic offices because that's what we've told the public, unfortunately. But there's an art to helping them become a long-term practice member, then values that this is rippling through my life. And there's having a process about that and a system that aligns with your values. I just heard, it was another presentation, and someone said, you know, was there talking in the crowd and, you know, not talking to amongst each other before people were speaking. Oh, well, they only come in for three visits, and if they're not out of pain in that time, they're gone. Like, if that's what we're doing, that's we're not living up to what our profession is meant to do for people's lives. We're letting people down, you know?
Exactly.
So now, what part of practice got you to you were burned out? What was not working?
I think it was because I was trying to fit into this box that I didn't belong in. I think that was definitely part of the burnout. And every time I would go to my practice management group, they would be like, just follow the recipe. Just do that. Just follow the scripts. Like, go back to this and go back to that. And I would, so I would feel, again, even though my practice was successful, I didn't actually increase in, like, the amount of money I was making once I dropped the practice management group, but so it was successful. It just wasn't fulfilling. I think that was part of it. The other part was I was spending way too many hours doing things that were not aligned with me, like spinal screenings. I'm more of an introverted personality. I have that introverted personality. So every time I would go, there was this, and it's great. It works for people that love it, do it. You know, it's effective. For me, I just wasn't enjoying it. So I stopped doing the things I wasn't enjoying. I started to design my life first. This is even before kids. Thank God I did that before having kids. But I started to look at my life and be like, okay, what do I want to experience in my life? How can I live more of my life so that I can give to more life to my patients?
Mm-hmm.
And so I designed my life and I decided, okay, I want to work part-time. I don't want to run a Mickey Mouse operation. I want to be, you know, I want to make good money. I want to serve a lot of people. What feels to me like a lot of people, what's right for me. And then, I want to do everything based on custom for myself, how I feel about things. And so once I made that switch, that was when I started to create the part-time $1 million cash practice. And that was the process also to drop insurance. Cause I was like, I'm not in alignment with insurance. Insurance is like, I'm a chiropractor. I'm a rebel. Why would I want to, you know, subscribe to this insurance companies that are going to control what I do with my patients? That's not aligned with me. I literally dropped it overnight. Like, I went to my office and I was like, listen, team, we're not taking insurance anymore. I mean, I was still in network because it takes like 60 days to get out of network.
Right.
But it was an overnight decision. So I implemented all the changes, and over time it became, you know, what it became.
Love it. Now, if people want to get more Dr. Nona, how do they connect with you and learn more about you, and how do they do that?
You know, I'm on Instagram a lot these days. That seems to be a good platform for me. So it's Cairo.mom on Instagram. But they can also go to my website on NonaJavid.com, which I know my last name is does not help these situations. The first D is silent, but you'll put it in the
yes.
notes, yes. right? Yeah, okay, yep. Perfect.
And I think you have a mastermind coming up. Or tell people about that.
Yeah, I have. There are a few ways that I help people. One is obviously private one-on-one coaching, where some people really need that. Some people don't fit into the mastermind group. So with that, I am if you can think of practice management groups, I'm the opposite of that. I have all the systems that I did to create the part-time million-dollar cash practice. They will get access to that, but I always preface it with, like, I don't want you to use anything in there unless it's aligned with you. And we're meeting with them week to week and just kind of customizing everything to them. And then the other thing that we do is, the other way that I can help them is with what you mentioned, is the mastermind group. It's a month-to-month fee. You know, they don't have to commit to anything. We start with creating a niche all the way to systems, communication, and we try to do it as customized as we possibly can for people who are participating. And that's an ongoing enrollment. So if anyone's interested, they can message me on Instagram or reach out to me, and we'll see if it's a good fit for them.
Excellent. Excellent. And we will put all the links in the post that goes along with this podcast. Now, another thing that I want to ask you about is this creating a unique niche. I think it's very important. I think a lot of the things you talk about in your content is important, but tell us about the experience that you've had with that.
You know, I thought that I was, when I first started, I thought I'm going to see families, I want to have a pediatric practice, and I did. And I thought that was niche enough. And it turns out it wasn't, because even if you think in the Western medicine, like, the OBs have their specialty, and then pediatric is a completely different specialty, right? But I was seeing young families, so it was more broad, pregnant moms and babies and kids, and then, of course, they bring in their husbands. It's more, like, in the past few years, I made the switch. I remember when I first started, I had this kid who came into the office and he was on the spectrum, and he wouldn't, you know, and it was one of my first patients who I saw with some kind of a disability like that. So I wasn't very confident in actually diagnosing him, but in the back of my mind was like, there's something going on with him. Like, he's on the spectrum. And the mom was kind of thinking that, but I wouldn't say it, mm-hmm. you know, I didn't feel I had the place to say that. And so that was a big impact in my career, because even since that was for year one in practice. So since then, I was like, I need to learn more about, you know, kids on the spectrum. I need to help these kids. And there was so much noise going on that I never made the switch to see those kids, because there was always like, well, you have all these scary traction units. How are they going to do traction? How are they going to do this? What about all these other patients? They're going to come in screaming. You got to turn off the lights, you know, all these things. And then towards the end of, like 10 years later, I made the switch and I created a niche for myself to see kids on the spectrum. And that was instrumental from a business perspective, even though I went from a heart place, right? I wanted to help these kids. But it turned out to be a complete new niche that nobody was doing. It turned out that I... You know, I was the CBP doctor in my area, like I was the only one or one of three or whatever at different times. But when I made the switch, I became the only, not only the only chiropractor who works on kids on the spectrum, but also the only chiropractor who does corrective care, all this funky stuff on kids on the spectrum, right? Mm-hmm. So creating that, it just grew like wildfire. So I became really interested in how that works and other, when people create similar niches in chiropractic, like I only want to see babies or I only want to see pregnant moms. And it turns out that it's super successful. A lot of us have you read the book Blue Ocean Strategy?
No, I have not. I know of it and know right? a little bit, but I have not read it. It's on my list.
So, and I know from a philosophical perspective, we all want to serve everybody. But I think that if we break it down, and if I have a niche of, you know, kids on the spectrum, and you have a niche of family, and somebody else has a niche of sports. Collectively, I think we have a better chance of seeing everybody in chiropractic care. I know that's not popular opinion, but that's based on the experience that I have had.
Well, I agree with you. There's a book that I'll recommend to you and to the listeners. It's called The One-Page Marketing Plan. Maybe you've heard of it. And it talks about that, like, you know, if your business, and remember, chiropractic's a business, you're running office, unless you're doing a nonprofit care thing. Most of you, it's not a hobby, but you're actually trying to make a profit while you're changing lives for the better. Most running a business, if your niche is everybody that has a spine, that's not a niche, and it's too wide a market. And that book maps that out really well as how, like, with small businesses, especially in chiropractors, for the most part, run a small business. Having something, you know, dial that in so you can be more efficient with your marketing dollars is very, very important. So to have it will actually increase our reach. And it doesn't mean that everybody with a spine isn't a chiropractic patient, doesn't need care. But as you, an individual, making sure you stand out, you know, head and shoulders and knees above and toes above the crowd.
Yeah, and to stand out is one thing, and the other is what you touched on, is establishing which marketing methods are going to be efficient for my niche, right? So if I'm seeing moms, I'm not going to go set up at the farmer's market, perhaps, or I might not be doing lunch on lunch. I might go to a meetup group with moms, mm-hmm. or I might reach out to speak to mom groups, right? So it eliminates, and that's how you're able to work part-time, and, you know, because you become way more efficient. Right now, you're all over the place trying to do everything to just bring in mm-hmm. new
things. Right. Now, one last thing I'd like to touch on, because this has come up a lot recently, and it's something that you also, and again, I'm so excited for you to be sharing at Mile High. I've seen you speak before. You present incredibly well and real content that people, like, help them think and actually implement. And that's one of the things I love about that you'll be presenting this year. It's come up a number of times, people that I'm mentoring, and I was just at Life West. We missed each other. I don't know how we did that, but I was speaking at Life West, and students had this question about what do we charge and how much do we charge and how do we charge so much? I just want to give it away. And, like, there was all of that going on in the students asking questions of me. And I know you've been through lots of fee systems. I've gone through tons of fee systems over the 20 years. How do people decide what to charge for this, you know, priceless service, chiropractic?
You know, and you're right. I started charging $25 a visit. I gave away care, you know, then I moved on to $35 and $45. And I ended up, you know, much higher than that. But I think that ultimately, like, if you ask, again, unpopular opinion, if you ask, you know, an average chiropractor who's successful, they'll tell you, okay, well, take a look at what everybody else is charging around you. You know, take a look at the economy. What are people willing to pay? Da, da, da. And for me, again, if I subscribe to that model of thought, I'd still be charging $40, you know, a visit for in Newport Beach, even, you know, because that's what everybody around me is charging. However, I didn't subscribe to that. I subscribed to, well, one, what am I actually selling? I'm not selling neck pain and back pain. I'm selling, like, life potential. So that is valuable. I'm selling a nervous system that functions, that can kill off coronavirus, you know, or whatever. So how much value are you actually bringing in to your patient? So what is it that you're selling? One step beyond that question, I guess, you know, what are you really selling? And then the other is, what are you willing to pay for an adjustment for yourself, you know? Are you, especially if you have a loved one, for example, that you know that this chiropractor down the street is the person to go to, and your loved one is suffering, and you know that you have confidence, you have conviction that this person can help them with such and such problem, what are you willing to pay? You know, I know for you and I who have kids, and a lot of the listeners who have kids, we're willing to do whatever it takes. Like, we'll take out a mortgage on our house, right, to pay for for the health of our kids. So what would I be willing to pay? And so consider that. and how much value you're bringing in, and then how unique and niche are you? Because if you're just the traditional, like, rack 'em and crack 'em style, then yeah, that's going to be the $40 adjustment. But if you're bringing an additional value, you've established yourself as completely different than the chiropractor down the street. You have a specialty, or you know what you are focusing on, you know, and you have more of a knowledge in that category. Those three categories are going to increase your value of what you are willing to charge. And then, of course, how much conviction you have about chiropractic. I think that's going to be the biggest one, is what you believe chiropractic does for people. You think it's going to get them out of neck pain, it's going to be $40 or less. If you think it's going to do way more, it's going to affect generations beyond that, then guess what? It's more than $40.
Right. Absolutely. Love it. Love it. And again, why we talked about students, lots of students will be at Mile High. They need some of this information so they can start, you know, better and improve their learning curve, so they don't end up in the point where they're broke and burned out, like you experienced and I experienced also, you know. I practiced through that economic downturn that you mentioned, where like everything, my whole income dropped down, and I had to reinvent my office. So I know the experience, right?
Yeah.
So again, we're psyched to have you at Mile High. August 20th to 23rd, milehigh2020.com, easy to remember. What's any last thing you'd like to share with our listeners?
Well, you brought up the students. I just want to tell them that, you know, we are only born with two fears. Fear of falling when you're a baby, not failing, but falling, but also fear of loud noises, and that's it. So every other fear that you have that prevents you from starting a practice, you know, doing it your way or charging a certain amount, all of that is just a subluxation in between your ears.
Love it. Love it. And I'll tell you, one of the things about being at Mile High is taking care of the subluxations that are between the ears. So thank you for joining us today. I know this is going to be one of people's favorite podcast episodes. And make sure you dial in to be there in August for Mile High. Rise up with us and impact the profession, impact your community, impact lives of students. We look forward to seeing you there, and keep changing spines and lives and minds with chiropractic.